From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a ranch in Lake County, California. That's where a little girl would play in her family's garden, visit their farm animals like cows and pigs, and also where she would visit a creek to watch the life cycle of a tadpole growing into a frog. And now, as an adult, she says that creek was kind of her laboratory, and the ranch was her refuge, a place to connect with nature that was miles from her home in Oakland. Her name is Rue Mapp, and her love and connectedness to nature continued into her adult life. As an Outward Bound participant at age 20, she learned to trust her feet while climbing a mountain. She went on biking trips and hiking tours, and during these experiences, she often found that she was the only African-American woman there. Then, after the events in Ferguson, Missouri, and the tension between African-Americans and police across the country, including Oakland, Mapp decided to organize a healing hike. She invited African-Americans to join her in the Redwood Bowl in the Oakland Hills, and there they connected with nature and with each other. They shared their common experiences and challenges surrounded by the beauty and peace of the wilderness. It was a transformative experience for the participants, and for Rue Mapp, it led her to found an organization called Outdoor Afro. Outdoor Afro is a nonprofit that celebrates and inspires African-American connections to and leadership in nature. Its goal is to change the narrative about African-Americans, the false notion that black people do not have a relationship with nature. You'll see Outdoor Afro members hiking, biking, fishing, kayaking, and birding, all while connecting and building friendships with each other. Rue Mapp is a leading voice in national conversations about making outdoor activities more accessible to African-Americans. Next week, she'll be in Rochester as a guest of the Genesee Land Trust. But first, we have the honor of hosting her on Connections. Rue Mapp, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful introduction. I'm over here smiling.
Well, and so are our guests in studio, and I'll welcome them now. Gay Mills, Executive Director of the Genesee Land Trust, welcome to you.
Well, thank you.
And Regina Jeames is here, Community Programs Coordinator for the Genesee Land Trust. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Gay, real briefly here, because we're going to dive right into it with Rue and talk about her story and her insights, which I think, as we mentioned, target obviously a part of our population, but it's really a story for the American story and what it means for all of us when we stereotype and make assumptions. And I, there's so much I want to talk about. But before we do, I know you want to tell people about the event that's coming up that is free, but you want people to register. What's coming up?
Yes, thank you, Evan. The event is Thursday, September 19th, and we do ask people to register. It is free. Genesee Land Trust is the local conservation organization dedicated to finding and protecting those spaces that you, as you so described, the creek, the places where children can play, hike, visit. And we wanted to introduce and bring Rue Mapp here for you all to experience.
And Regina, what are you most excited about?
Having her here. Definitely excited about having her here, having her represent a population that some may think are not experiencing the nature like we know we should.
Well, we're going to jump into that with Rue, but Regina, why do you think that is? I mean, one of the things that Rue mentioned in a video that I watched was, you know, the trees don't know if you're black. The trees don't know if you're white. The trees don't know what your income level, your background, or where you grew up. But why do you think if there is a perception or a stereotype or sometimes a barrier, why does that happen?
Sometimes, like you just said, it is a barrier. Sometimes people do not have access to the beautiful preserves that I have learned about and can easily access. Sometimes there's not transportation there. Sometimes people feel like they're not welcome. And we know, just like Rue Mapp says, trees, they don't have a conscience. Trees, they don't have an opinion. And neither should an individual about whether they're going to go outdoors to a park, to a preserve or not.
So, Rue, what's your first memory of childhood in nature?
I remember actually talking to leaves, fallen leaves on the ground. It was autumn, and I was walking along a path near the ranch, and I had bare feet, and there were all of these sticky leaves in this beautiful pattern on the ground. And I just looked at them, and I remember asking the question, what do you know? And I remember that like it was yesterday. And as you said, you know, that ranch was not only about a place of laboratory, but a place of deep connections. You know, my parents came from the South. They came from a Jim Crow South, and they came as millions of African Americans did in search of the Isabel Wilkerson, search of the warmth of other suns. And they, you know, came, of course, for the economic opportunities, but they brought along with them that love for nature and the outdoors that encouraged them to create that space that they could find refuge in and share with others. And that became the place where I had so many beautiful connections to nature. I mean, when I describe it to people, it's otherworldly. You know, it's before the time of slow food and all the things that are really trendy right now. But we really did have, you know, fruit, you know, growing from trees that would turn into preserves, you know, at the hands of my mom. And we harvested collard greens and cows and pigs and would take that harvest back home to Oakland. And so there was this real wonderful synergy, a lived experience that wasn't just one episode or one instance, but an everyday way of life.
So, you know, we go back maybe a decade or so when you launched Outdoor Afro, and I saw you tell this story in which someone asked you, if money and time were not an object, what would you really want to do with your life? And I think what you said was, you know, you thought about it and you opened your mouth and your entire life sort of fell out. And you started talking about connecting people back to nature. Tell me a little bit about that moment and what changed for you there.
Yeah, well, you know, there were a lot of constants in my life that I had taken for granted. You know, we think sometimes there are things that we love that aren't really that big of a deal, you know, that, you know, my love for nature was something that was always a part of my life and something I practiced, you know, through adulthood, becoming a wife and mother with my family, but I didn't really think it was that big of a deal. I also really loved technology. I was an early adopter of computer technology growing up in the Bay Area. I was programming basic code language when I was 10 years old, and I always loved connecting people to resources that would help improve their quality of life, and had taken active roles, you know, in my corporate career, making connections between our company and nonprofit organizations. So there were these threads that I just didn't think of as anything but the ABCs of me. And when I was asked the question that removed all of the barriers that we put between ourselves and the things that we're really passionate about, you know, we live in a society that tells us that you work really hard and then after you retire, you can do what you really love, you know. But this was this moment, this opening that really surprised me. And after I answered that question, I literally said, I'd probably start a website to reconnect African Americans to the outdoors. And in the silent moment that followed of surprise, I knew that that was what my life's calling was. And 2 weeks later, I just grabbed a template from a blog and began to write and to share these stories that I'm sharing with you. And I realized that there were people, and this is the very beginning of social media. Keep in mind, you know, in 2009, we weren't using social media to activate real life experiences. There was a lot of suspicion about really how to use it. But what happened from my kitchen table was that people responded to me and said to me that they loved nature too. And I realized that we actually had not a lack of participation, but a lack of the visual representation of our participation in the outdoors, and that there were people like me and like my parents and my forebears who also love the outdoors. We just had not seen it. And that was the moment that Outdoor Afro was able to become a national conversation.
Talking to Rue Mapp, the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, who is coming to Rochester next week, Thursday, September 19th, starting at 5:30 p.m. It's a free event at the Edgerton Recreation Center on Bacchus Street. Jump on GenesseeLandTrust.org for information. It is free. They'd love for you to register in advance so they know that you're coming. But the story that you're hearing this hour is just a taste of what you're going to have with Rue next week. And, you know, Rue, I have been able to find a number of instances in which people are, and sometimes African Americans, joking on social media, but there's a tinge of the stereotype that there's nothing more white than camping. There's nothing more white than Birkenstocks, things like that. And I wonder how you feel about that kind of stereotype, even when we're joking about it.
I think we have to really get away from specific activities of like the you know, prioritizing like what outdoor engagement looks like, because when you really talk to people and unpack the things that they love about the outdoors, it's not necessarily about camping, quite frankly. It's about being out and connecting maybe over a, like when people tell me, well, I don't like the outdoors, I'm like, well, do you like to do cookouts? Well, yeah, I like to do that. Well, do you like to walk along a path sometimes, you know, in your local park or lake? Well, yes, I like to do that. And so I think we've created this hierarchy or this way of making some outdoor activities more visible or more valid than others. And I say that the outdoors is everywhere, and everyone has a way to connect with the outdoors in a way that feels relevant in their own lives. You know, I look at how, you know, people who are busy working parents, for instance, it's a really big ask to have people go and do activities far away from home, to a place they've never been, to do activities that they may not necessarily be prepared for. Say gear, equipment may be a factor. And they may have just very limited time in the scope of all the things that people have to be responsible for on any given weekend, such as, you know, children in sports or aging parents and sororal or church activities. And so Outdoor Afro is really here to say you can love the outdoors in any time increment and really with the widest range of opportunities that are not limited to just hiking and camping. And it's really sometimes in those real quiet, it could be in just walking your dog in your neighborhood and observing the change in the seasons as you do those things. You know, all of those activities, they matter.
Yeah, and certainly, obviously, camping is just a thread of that. In a moment, I'd like to kind of go back to even your own early adulthood and talk about some of your Outward Bound stories and experiences, because some of your own stories are extraordinary. But on the camping thread, I wonder if you think it's harmful when someone like Sarah Zhang, she's recently hired to write for the New York Times in their opinion section. Here's what she tweeted. She tweeted, "Why do white people like camping so much? They say, let's spend exorbitant sums of money so we can get eaten by bugs and poop outdoors. This seems like a good use of time. Oh, white people." That's Sarah Zhang. There's a cheekiness there, but is that harmful, you think, Rue?
I don't necessarily think it's harmful. I think she picks up on a thread that I've discussed about at length in the past, and that is the introduction of extra adrenaline in people's already stressed out lives, right? So when I think about, you know, especially communities that experience, you know, a baseline level of stress in daily life, the stress of having to live with the isms and the artifacts of the isms that are present in our lives, I think that asking people to add extra stress and adrenaline to their lives, and that, you know, camping and dangling off the side of a cliff, you know, those may not be what people consider relaxing activities to do on a weekend or in leisure time. And let's even talk about who's got leisure time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks who just, you know, they work throughout their whole weekend often, or they work on an irregular schedule that doesn't permit the opportunity to go away for days at a time or to be disconnected from their families. And so I think that there absolutely is privilege that is unspoken and unseen when we talk about the kinds of activities that some people can enjoy more easily or access more easily than others. But again, it's so important in our work to decenter camping and decenter mm-hmm. those high adrenaline, high technical ability activities, and really get down to the basics of what it means to get our nature swagger back, what it means to actually be in nature in connection with other people, and to understand you know, the way that, you know, the world is ordered in a balanced and harmonious way so that we can be better protectors and stewards of it.
So let's decenter camping and let's talk about where you start, especially in trying to grow a culture of loving the outdoors in many different ways. Becoming an outdoor enthusiast doesn't just mean, quote, going camping. It starts where specifically, Rue?
It starts in the home. And I think that Outdoor Afro's number one job, you know, aside from getting people outside, is to help to restore that outdoor leadership back home. When I talk to most people about the experiences that they love, their earliest memories in nature, it almost always involves a family member. I hear stories about grandmother's gardens, about grandfathers and fathers taking you fishing. You know, so many different things that we experience. They start at the home, and they're not the one-time experience. It's like me growing up, having those experiences over and over again. And you know, I benefited from being in the Girl Scouts and environmental education programs, sure, in school and through my young adulthood. But I'll say that that value of nature know-how and comfort in nature, the chance that I had to go out and play and get dirty and to actually make mud pies, you know, those all informed my ability to have comfort and in nature so that I could grow into an adult with that similar embrace. And I think it's important that we help empower people not only to, you know where to go and what to do, because sometimes people just need to be reconnected. It's not that Outdoor Afro is connecting African Americans to the outdoors. We've always been connected, but sometimes you need to have that disruption that may have occurred in your family repaired, so that you feel confident in where to go, what to do, how to be, and you can continue to go and show others in your family and in your community on your own.
Regina James, where do you think it starts? I mean, you agree that it starts at home?
I do, definitely. I'm just thinking and listening as Rue Mapp is sharing some of her experiences and memories, and I'm thinking about my own. I remember my father was an avid gardener, and I totally disliked gardening. However, I like playing outside. I like running in the streets. I like acting like I was an airplane. I liked all those things. And it was only after his death that I reconnected, because life had gotten in the way and I hadn't been enjoying the outdoors as much as I used to. And so just listening to Rue Mapp, and thank you so much for going back, helping me go back down memory lane, Ms. Rue, I reconnected, and in doing so, I helped others reconnect with things that have gotten them away from enjoying life.
So when you reconnect, what did that actually look like for you?
For me, it looked like a few different things. I started what I call a spiritual journey walk, and I do that on Wednesdays and Sundays. I started taking more just leisurely walks, not just on those days. I started my garden that I never did before. I started.
Your father might be proud.
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. And not only that, I started inviting family and friends to join me. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing, because now, just recently, I took a few friends down to Turning Point here in Rochester.
Turning Point Park?
Yes.
Oh, my favorite place in Rochester.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, it's the best.
One of the hidden gems.
Absolutely.
Jewels. So I took them down there, and the aha moments that they were having, and me just watching them experience those aha moments were just, I don't really have words to describe how it made me feel to give them that experience. And then they, too, decided, you know what? I'm coming back. And I'm going to bring some friends. And I remember this and I remember that. So, yes, outdoors has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. But more so than anything, when you're out in nature, it just helps you reconnect with who you are, who you used to be, who you aspire to be.
Well, and I'm glad you bring up Turning Point as an example, because I want to ask all of our guests about accessibility to green space. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of important I think aspects to this. First of all, and by the way, my brain just went to this place that I saw for the first time. I live in the Shalott area. For the first time, the other day, there is a lookout that if you get off 104, swing around Maplewood, heading over to Lake Avenue, there is a lookout. But if you're in your car and you don't get out, it's blocked. If you get out and walk 8 feet, you get this jaw-dropping view of the river, where the river bends, and I cannot wait to take my son back there when the leaves turn, right? Mm-hmm. But you got to get out of a car to do it. Well, some people have different access to transportation. A lot of Rochesterians don't have cars. And one of the parts of conversation about accessibility says that, well, is there a park within walking distance? Are there green spaces within walking distance? Have we prioritized those well or not? My mind, Regina, I go to a couple things. I can't believe how many people who live in the area where I live never go down to Turning Point. And it's right there. You can walk there. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most beautiful places. And there's probably spots like that all across Rochester where people are not necessarily taking advantage. But I wonder if you think we need more or if we have enough when it comes to accessing green space for everybody, no matter where you live, no matter what your income or transportation. Do we have enough? How do you feel about it?
No, I think there's never enough. However, with that being said, I think that people do not utilize their means of getting to those green spaces as much as they can. We have the Genesee Park right here in the city of Rochester, and we have the Lower Falls, we have the Upper Falls, and those are walking distances, mm-hmm. and so many people have not experienced that. One, because they don't even know that it exists, and two, I'm going to say this. One of the reasons they don't experience some of the river and the green space near the river is because they're afraid. Some of it is they have reasons to be afraid, some not. But, yeah, we definitely need more. I think we can never have enough green space accessibility. And that's what we're here to
try to do. Yeah. You want to weigh on that, Gate? Can we do more there?
We can always do more, but I also want to say it doesn't have to be a huge park. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, you know, the Rocky Mountains or even Turning Point. It can be a garden in a backyard. It can be, you know, a collection of trees at the corner, that little spot where you can view down the river from the safety, not of your car, but of standing there. There's yep. many, many places here locally, within the city, within the region, that are ready and waiting for people to experience. And I just would like to repeat what Rue said, which is that we won't care about places that we don't know or feel comfortable. And caring for our overall environment means caring about the land and the water. And so having those experiences, especially as children with family members, is so important. And so that takes a community to do that. And we're so excited that Rue will come and talk about that.
So Rue, whether it's Rochester or so many other places where Americans call home, generally speaking, do you think we can do better with allowing anyone anywhere to have access to green space?
Well, I'm just really thankful for the work of the Genesee Land Trust because we need, you know, these organizations that are land stewards at their core to, you know, think about people and places and how people can connect with these places. And I also want to point out something that's very specific to the African American community and our historic relationship to the outdoors. You know, unfortunately, in this country, we do have a living generational memory of exclusion from public places where Black people could not go to any park they wanted to go to or any beach they wanted to go to. There was outright exclusion, or there was the colored section of these places that were often inferior in facilities and in capacities. But people persisted. They made the best of it. They still recreated. They still got out in spite of the lack of access. And then sadly, we have a living generational memory of bad things happening in the woods, where trees don't necessarily represent safety and refuge, but instead terror. We can turn to the Billie Holiday lyrics of Strange Fruit as a reference point there. And then finally, we have, and I'm so glad that the mention of lakes and rivers came up, because you know, we have, unfortunately, a huge gap in the ability for African-American youth to know how to swim in proportion to their white counterparts. So African-American children are drowning at five times of that of their white counterparts ages 5 through 19. And that's our heritage of exclusion from pools and places where youth could learn how to swim. And so I'm proud to say that Outdoor Afro this year has launched a swim program, and we're helping every youth in our sphere of influence learn how to swim, because it is not only a life-saving skill, but it's also a nature embracing skill, and that you're not going to want to put a pole in a lazy lake or go kayaking or hiking along a river or stream. And certainly you're not going to care about plastic in the ocean if you don't have a relationship with the outdoors. So I think that we have to really look at, take an honest look at the history of a disrupted connection and find ways, you know, through healing, atonement, and honest examination, so that we can tell a new narrative and create new connections that can, you know, help us overcome, you know, what may not have been a pleasant past for us in nature.
Yeah, Rue, I mean, that history, that racist history regarding just the relationship to water in this country, that's not an overstatement. That is American history. And that racist action is now, in some ways, it is deadly. But what can you tell us a little bit more about what your organization is doing regarding swimmerships, regarding how you can and how anybody can kind of start to offer some redress to that history and change some of those numbers and what happens every year with those tragic stories of drownings?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, you know, we want people to be in positive relationship with all aspects of nature. And water is so essential in the conversation. And it was a light bulb moment for me when I had taken a group white water rafting. And for this particular trip, you didn't need to know how to swim because everyone had a personal flotation device. But I saw, you know, people really struggling with the experience. And there was actually a swimming pool that was in the campsite, which is at our base camp. And there was a 6-year-old boy who wanted to jump in the pool and swim with the other children and told his mom, you know, he would be too embarrassed to go because he'd have to have a personal flotation device, and the other kids did not. And when I overheard that story, when I saw how some of the folks on the trip were reacting with so much terror and fear in what otherwise could have just, you know, been an easy and exhilarating trip, you know, I realized there was something more that we needed to be doing, that we needed to give people a baseline of comfort confidence, and that learning to swim, or at very minimum, you know, getting people to the point where they could be drown proof, you know, in a shallow body of water, was something that I felt was in reach. And when I started to share the idea with our network, everyone got it. And up to, I think in the past, we just launched our swimmership program in just this last year. And in the last 6 months, we've given out what we call swimmerships, over 100 of those swimmerships, and we're really thankful for the lives that are touched, and the impact we have in this really important way of helping people get confidently and joyously connected to nature.
Talking to Rue Mapp, the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, where would you send people to learn more about what you're doing, Rue?
You can go to our website, outdoorafro.com, and we have the application for anyone, and you don't have to be a child, because we really feel strongly that both children and their caregivers need to know how to swim, because it's the caregiver who's going to be literally the driver of those opportunities. So we want you to go to our website, we want you to apply. We have an open round right now, And we also welcome anyone who cares about this work to consider donating in support of these swimmerships, that we pay the swim instructors directly for successful applicants.
Talking to Rue Mapp, who is coming to Rochester for an event next Thursday, that's September 19th, 5:30 p.m. at the Edgerton Rec Center in Rochester. She's a guest of the Genesee Land Trust, the event titled Diversity, Equity, and Leadership Outdoors, and it's free. They'd like you to RSVP in advance, GenesseeLandTrust.org. After our only break, we'll take some feedback from listeners on this. And if you look at National Park Conversation, again, that's just one small slice of what we're talking about when we're talking about outdoor appreciation, the enjoyment of being outdoors and having those opportunities. But the National Park Service reported that in 2017, the last full year of data, only 7% of visitors to our national parks were Black. We're going to talk about why that is, what's to blame for that, and what is maybe starting to change that, and more. And much more with Rue after this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, author Jonathan Franzen has set off an uproar with his new piece for The New Yorker. He's basically a climate nihilist. He says climate change is happening, we're not going to stop it, and we ought to prepare for that. But the experts say that is a dangerous view, and he's wrong on a lot of the facts. Then in our second hour, we'll talk about Midtown, the YMCA, tax incentives, and who deserves them. Talk with you Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back. Hal in Dansville on the phone with Rue and the team from the Genesee Land Trust. Go ahead, Hal.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to share a great opportunity at a local Finger Lakes State Park at Stony Brook, where I've enjoyed swimming in their pool all summer. It's like the United Nations. People come from all over. This Sunday, we have the educational director of the region speaking on stewardship, natural and human history of the parks. His name is Josh Teeter, and he'll be speaking with illustrations at the shelter at the campground entrance, which is the south of Dansville. You'd take 390 south, take 36 south, and the second entrance is at the top of a hill. That's the upper entrance, and it's in the shelter there at 3 p.m., and anyone's welcome to join and learn more about our Finger Lakes and the New York State Park System's history and natural history there. So I very much appreciate your call as the Sierra Club leader in New York State. What you were talking about, Evan, is very quite true. We have had some national prominent leaders, but we need much more diversity.
Well, Hal, thank you very much for that phone call. I appreciate that. And just looking at national park opportunities, as I mentioned, the National Park Service reports that in the last full year of data, 7% of total visitors to our national parks were African American. Rue, what do you blame for that, or how do you sort of make sense of that?
Well, you know, I have a slightly different viewpoint. You know, I look at, first of all, that, you know, African Americans, you know, we don't make up, you know, 50% of the United States population. So we have to, you know, look at the actual numbers we have.
But it's more than 7.
You know. Yeah, well, it is more than 7, but we also have to look at, as I mentioned before, you know, there, when we're looking at especially our remote national parks that are hours away from where people live, it becomes a much bigger ask to expect people to go to those places. Mm-hmm. Because I know, for instance, if you don't know how to navigate the reservation system for getting in some of our, especially our big national parks like Yellowstone or Yosemite, you don't know that you have to reserve sometimes a year in advance. I mean, these are not spur of the moment places to go to, in other words. You have to have a reliable car. You have to have the time. You have to have the know-how. You have to have the equipment. And there's a lot of things that you have to overcome in order to access these places. What I do find is, in this, and it would be really interesting to see the data around the proximity, because there are lots more people who access their local national parks. There's over 400 national parks, and people don't realize that there are many, many national parks right in their own backyard. And so when you look at those places close to where close to populations where African Americans live and where people can access easily without necessarily, you know, going far away to a remote place, I'll bet those numbers go up much higher.
Talking to Rue Mapp, and Rue is a leading voice in national conversations about outdoor activities, outdoor accessibilities, in particular for African Americans. And Rue is the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro. And, you know, in some ways, we are slowly, as a country, sort of expanding what has typically been sort of white-centered spaces, even on our currency. I had heard rumors that Harriet Tubman was going to be on there before the Trump administration slowed down that train. But that was an interesting name that came up in one of the conversations I saw you have regarding your own conservation heroes. You said Harriet Tubman, a wilderness leader, and I thought that's a great way to think of her, but why do you describe her that way?
Yes, I mean, I think that we have to, this is again a way of reshaping the narrative to help us think about African-American connections to the outdoors from an asset-based perspective, recognizing that we have always been connected. We have always had people in our communities and our families who have been champions and leaders in the outdoors. And Harriet Tubman shoots right to the top of the list for me because she absolutely had to know the lay of the land. She had to know the language of nature in order to lead people, often in the cover of night, to freedom. And that is so powerful to me because I feel that that opportunity still exists today. When I think about the healing hikes that we did, when I think about just the ways that we don't have to be under the cloud of racism when we're under the shade of a tree, that too is freedom. But I think that we oftentimes don't elevate people in our history. I think about George Washington Carver. I mean, this man was teaching farmers basically how to compost, you know, and he was an amazing artist and environmental educator who, you know, took, you know, the peanut to new and amazing entrepreneurial heights. So I just feel like we have a lot of people in our history and in our narrative that we could be talking to our children about in a different way and give them an opportunity to build and carry forth that history into the future.
Regina James, who would be on your list when you think about conservation or heroes of nature?
The first person that comes to my mind is rather... people would believe it or not, is Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., because he was in the space that most people don't consider as being outdoors. He was in the cities evoking change, and that was by riding the bus or not riding the bus, sitting in different places or not sitting in different places. He was making himself and others understand the importance of being there and being accepted. So he's one of the first persons that comes to my mind as a person that's making change in an unorthodox kind of way.
Well, challenging. Yes. What was allowable in society and what was not, mm-hmm. and how our sort of lines had been drawn, and what has changed there. So before we continue here, I want to make sure Gay Mills can tell you a little bit about what Genesee Land Trust does, because if you come next week to meet Rue Mapp at their event on Thursday, September 19th, you got to jump on GenesseeLandTrust.org where you can learn more. But how do you describe the mission of what you're doing, Gay?
So our mission is to preserve and protect local lands and waterways that enhance the quality of life in the greater Rochester region. We work in the Monroe and Wayne County area, and we protect wildlife habitat. We work to conserve farmland for locally grown food, and we've been really focusing on trying to create connections to nature in all of those different ways. It's a rural, suburban, urban environment, and it's really important to think of all of those parts of our community as we consider what projects we do next.
GenesseeLandTrust.org if you want to register in advance for the free event with Rue, who is on the line with us. And if you missed her story earlier this hour, growing up in Oakland, but someone who had connections to the outdoors at an early age, as she went through part of her life, thought about how to connect more people and has made that the passion and the work of her life now. And so we're, as the CEO of Outdoor Afro, they're doing a lot of work. We talked about work with just increasing access to swimming and the knowledge of how to do that. But you have worked and done work with and for thousands of people. You report about 35,000 people assisted in just 2018 alone. How, Rue?
Well, one of the things that people wanted to do once they discovered us online about 7 years ago, they wanted to find other people who look like them to get reconnected to the outdoors. And so I turned to social media and asked who wanted to be an outdoor Afro leader. And I had about a baker's dozen of folks who said, I'd like to try that. And I basically just downloaded everything that I had learned through my experiences working at the Audubon Society and with my local park and recreation district about, you know, connecting to nature, connecting people to nature, and wanted to do it in a way that felt a lot like that hospitality that I grew up with in my home. And that first year, that group of people, they got people outside doing all kinds of outdoor activities. They used social media to tell their story. And they got maybe about 500 people out. And just over the years, we continue to grow. And now we have over 80 leaders who represent 30 states. And now we have a participation network of over 37,000 people and growing. And the stories that come across my desk every single weekend will just leave you filled with joy that is universal in nature, and that we are able to have people, you know, reconnect to places, reconnect to spaces, activities that maybe they haven't done in years. We're helping, you know, parents to help their children connect because, you know, I tell people it's cheaper than going to the movies, going on a walk with your kid. I mean, it's not only, you know, a good thing to do, but it's actually good for the wallet as well. And so it's just been very enlightening and inspiring to see how people's lives are transformed and that nature leadership being restored back to the home.
And so, Rue, I understand with this next question that it kind of gets a little bit far afield from the goal of making accessibility truly the case for everybody in any community, no matter your income, where you live, et cetera. But I am curious to ask you, given that you have been to a number of places throughout the world, including the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, is there a single experience that has been the most defining for you?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I think it's been a collection of experiences, and you bring up the Arctic, which was an important experience for me in that it's one of those places that very few people get to go to. And I happened to go with the support of Sierra Club, you know, back in 2014, and it was the year that we were celebrating the Wilderness Act. And in 1964, the Wilderness Act was signed, but also at the same time, the Civil Rights Act was signed. And those two caucuses were not talking to each other, I realized, because if they had seen the connection, the important connection between the need to protect vulnerable people and vulnerable places, we might have a very different conservation movement today. And when I went to the Arctic and I saw how, you know, we're looking at issues of food security, of people, Native people's connection being disrupted, as well as, of course, the precious, you know, resource that that truly wild place is for the world, that was one conversation. That wasn't a bunch of separate conversations. And it's the same conversation we're having in East Oakland, you know, where, you know, people are, you know, dealing with food deserts, for instance, and lack of access, you know, to canopy to shade their communities and provide a you know, a better quality of life. So, you know, I think it's this journey of leadership in this organization has been a tremendous teacher for me and has helped me to see the ways that, you know, while Outdoor Afro is focused, you know, on the African American community, that its purpose is absolutely universal. And I'm here, you know, to help us champion ways that we can use nature to find connection, especially in times like now, where we can tend to feel very, very disconnected and very different from one another. And as, you know, you said before, and as I say all the time, you know, the trees don't know you're black. The money, the birds don't know how much money is in your account. The flowers are going to bloom no matter what your gender is. And these are the kinds of connections that we need, I feel, now more than ever.
When you think about your past, I thought you might go to Outward Bound. And, you know, who knows when we're 20 years old and we're searching for things, what moment is going to sort of pivot us in a different direction in life? Can you tell a little bit about the idea of connecting with the wilderness, as you say, the capital W wilderness for the first time on Outward Bound and what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned and I've shared plenty, I had a lot of connections to nature, but I had never been in a true wilderness experience. So there I was in Sequoia Kings in this national forest, right off of the Pacific Crest Trail. I was one of the youngest and the only African American person on that trip. And I was rock climbing for the very first time, using equipment I'd never heard of. I'd never even seen a carabiner in my life. I didn't know about knots. I didn't know about any of these things. I had so many barriers to overcome. And so I was climbing as part of, you know, our ascent to the summit where we were going to camp that night. And I got about halfway up and got stuck and lost my light. And I lost my light because I didn't have the right equipment. And I'll tell you all more about the story next week when I come and do my talk. But basically, you know, I was stuck and I didn't know how I was going to get to the top. And at the moment of the deepest despair I think I've ever felt in my life, my instructor leaned over to me and he said, "Rue, trust your feet." And something in those words, those three words, caused me to dig in and scamper my way to the top. And I'll tell you, that was the moment I realized for the very first time how powerful of a teacher nature was. And I'm still trusting my feet. You know, I still sometimes I'm not sure about the ground beneath me or where I just came from or what's ahead. Feeling my way sometimes in the dark, it seems, like we all do. But that was a moment that I needed at the precipice of adulthood to know that I had what I needed in me and that I could use that lesson and continue to move forward in life in whatever ways and in whatever and through whatever challenges I might be facing.
You see why the Genesee Land Trust wanted Rue Mapp. These stories and this perspective throughout the hour and the mission. So as we let you go, Rue, tell us about what you think the future of your organization, Outdoor Afro, what does it look like? And tell us a little bit about the future.
Well, I think we're going to continue to find connections. We're going to continue to weave in technological tools, understanding that, you know, we absolutely have to harness the platforms of the day in order to help people to connect with one another. And we want to make it as easy as possible for people to do so. We feel like it's not enough to just get bigger for bigger's sake, but instead to grow deeper, to have our roots as an organization, you know, be, you know, like those redwood roots, you know, that, you know, here on the West Coast, we've got these coast redwoods and underneath the circuit surface, you see in these clusters of redwoods all of this interconnectivity of root system that allows these trees to grow tall. And that's how we feel about the growth of Outdoor Afro, that we cannot stand as one tree by ourselves, that we have to be interconnected to the world around us. And we have to continue to grow in a multidisciplinary way in order to meet people where they are and to grow them up. And, you know, and I always say to people that the day we know our work is done is when we look up and we see people outside recreating in nature in proportion to their population and their opportunity, and it's no big deal.
Rue, I'm grateful for the time, and we will see you in Rochester next week. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I can't wait to see you all next week.
Can't wait to see you.
Thank you.
That's Rue Mapp, the founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro, coming to Rochester as a guest of the Genesee Land Trust 9 days from now. GenesseeLandTrust.org for information about her visit. An event titled Diversity, Equity, and Leadership Outdoors starts at 5:30 next Thursday at the Edgerton Rec Center, and it's free, but let them know you're coming at GenesseeLandTrust.org. Gay Mills, the executive director, have a great event. Thanks for sharing the story this hour.
Thank you.
And Regina Jeames, community programs coordinator for the Genesee Land Trust, thank you for your perspective as well.
Thank you.
Our thanks to David Griffin, who is the volunteer. Megan Mack is the producer, and basically the author and the voice behind anything that sounds smart on this program, and Rob is the reason it sounds good. I'm just the guy on the mic, and I will talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.